the Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Women's Football Podcast. I'm Hamish, this is Kieran.
Hello, with a mouthful of food, I apologise for that.
And we are bringing you the latest show live from a Liverpool cafe. On the show we will look at the World Cup qualifiers with plenty of sides gaining momentum as they head towards Canada in 2015. Speaking of Canada, they've been in friendly action against the Korea Republic. The US have also been in friendly action as well, with a doubleheader against New Zealand. The Australia season is kicking off very soon, so we are joined by our friends over at the women's game, Danielle Warby. We'll have a look at the Ballon d'Or nominees. We'll have a look at the transfers in world football. There's been a couple in the NWSL that need careful analysis. But one happening in Sweden is with English midfielder Anita Asante. We will catch up with her a little later in the show, so let's get cracking.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Okay, let's begin with the World Cup qualifiers. And Kieran, I need to draw your attention to the previous podcast where you said that Bosnia will ship double figures against Sweden. The score was?
It was 1-0 to Sweden.
You also said that Denmark would beat Serbia. What was the score?
Did they draw, or they won 2-1?
1-1.
So clearly all that demonstrates is that I shouldn't be a pundit.
No, you shouldn't. Anyway, let's have a little rattle through some other notable scores. Slovenia did ship double figures against Germany. That was 13-0. Norway saw off Albania 7-0. Scotland beat Northern Ireland 2-0. We'll touch on England now. 2-0 win over Wales. And, well, where do you start with that game?
I think we commented on it in our audio updates during the game, didn't we? I think it was pretty much went as we expected. England had a lot of the ball. They dominated a lot of the possession. Wales dug deep and tried to get involved as much as they could do. Two massive blows, losing Jess Fishlock and Tash Harding before the hour mark, and that's always going to be difficult to come back from. They created a few chances, but if we're honest, England were fairly comfortable throughout.
Now, we've also got to mention that England saw off Turkey 6-0. So that leaves 4-0. It's 4-0. Evidence that I shouldn't be a presenter. That leaves Brent Hill 4 wins out of 4. We asked on our Twitter feed at WFPod whether you feel that Brent Hill deserves the full-time position. What was the result?
It was fairly mixed, but I would say that the overwhelming answer was probably no, which you have to say is a little bit surprising, because he's won his 4 games. England have scored 20 goals. They've conceded none in that time. But I will refer back to, I think, a couple of podcasts ago where I said Brent Hills has got a very difficult task on his hands, not because of the games that he's facing, but because of the games that he's maybe not facing, in that if he plays a Germany or a USA or a Sweden and he gets a win against one of those nations, then people are going to stand up, take notice and say, you have to give him the job. But unfortunately for him, it's been wins over Turkey and Belarus, who are considerably poorer than England, or certainly suggested that in the 3 games that England have played against them, and against Wales, which, while England were comfortable, if we're honest, they created chances, but there was certainly no domination in that game. They were in control, but they certainly didn't dominate. So the questions will remain, is he the right man? Some people said on Twitter, it's just a different man under the same regime, in the fact that he was Hope Powell's right-hand man. It's difficult. I'm glad I'm not the one that has to make the decision. That's all I can say.
I was going to say that is a very good point, that Brent Hills is, of course, Hope Powell's right-hand man. I think if you are going to make a change, you clear out the back lot and you start again, particularly after such a poor Euros. However, moving on, a few other results that caught our eye. Spain saw off Estonia 6-0. That's a good start to the Group 2 for them. Slovenia lost 3-0 to Republic of Ireland. Germany beat Croatia 4-0. Scotland beat Poland 4-0. We've touched on that Turkey-England result. Denmark lost 1-0 at home to Switzerland. That's a big shock.
It is and it isn't. I think, obviously, Denmark, we know about them. What they produced in the European Championships was very impressive, getting to the latter stages. But Switzerland are no mugs. As I mentioned in the last podcast, they were a playoff away from reaching the World Cup in 2011. They've got some good players. We mentioned Lara Dickenman. We mentioned Ramona Backerman, who is, without doubt, one of their best players, playing her football out in Sweden. So, yes, a surprise, but maybe not a shock, is how I would probably describe that one.
Sweden continued their fine form with a 5-0 win over the Faroe Islands, and Spain did likewise with a 2-0 win over Italy. Interesting to note that later on in November, Spain, Northern Ireland, France, Wales, Germany are all in action. Let's cross the pond and go over to the United States. A doubleheader with New Zealand. How do they get on?
Yeah, it was two games against, I think they're referred to as the All Whites, as opposed to the All Blacks, which is the New Zealand rugby team. But yeah, the All Whites, or the Football Ferns. Football Ferns? Football Ferns?
Ferns.
Football Ferns, there you go. See, again, proving why I should not be a pundit.
And redeeming me as a presenter.
Exactly. That's the whole point. That's what I'm here for, mate. I'm here to make you look good. That's exactly what I'm here for.
Not hard.
Yeah, it was two competitive matches, actually. I stayed up and watched the first one and saw highlights of the second one. The first one was a 4-1 win for the US, and that would suggest an overwhelming, dominating performance. But New Zealand had a few chances. They showed some glimpses of some good play. They're well organised. I like them. I like the way they play. They obviously got a consolation towards the end, which they probably deserve, to be fair to them. But the US at home, always very impressive, always very strong. They can afford to make changes. Alex Morgan wasn't even involved in the first game.
Nor the second, actually.
No, nor the second. And that proves what depth they've got. Sydney Leroux, Abby Wambeck, Kristen Press, Heather O'Reilly played in a front three in one of the games.
And second one.
The second one. There you go. See, you've done your research, mate.
I'm on fire tonight.
I've got catching up to do. But yeah, so they have options. You know, Alex Morgan is a big player for them. But even when she's missing, they still have plenty to fill her shoes.
A couple of interesting stats from the first game. Previous pod guest Carly Lloyd is now the 9th all-time scorer for the US, so congratulations to her. And Kristen Press, her 8th goal in 11 games in 2013 for the US national team. A starter?
Well, she's got to get past Wambeck and Morgan, that's the problem. The same story for Sydney Leroux. It's incredible to have such four world-class strikers. They're spoilt. They really, really are. They could play a different strike force every game if they chose to. So it's difficult for her. She's had an impressive season in Sweden. She's always performing when she plays for the US. I feel sorry for her because she is currently behind Morgan and Wambeck, as is Sydney Leroux.
I'm going to give you a little pop quiz now. True or false, was that the first time that Kristen Press and Abby Wambeck have been paired together in the same game?
I think it's true.
Is that because you've just seen it on my notepad?
No, you've got to remember, I'm a partially sighted man, mate. I cannot read your pad from where I'm sat.
Liverpool fans will be delighted to know that Sarah Gregorius started both games, of which the second was a 1-1 draw, so a much better result for them. Hannah Wilkinson scored both goals in the first game and then in the second game. The second one in the second game in the 87th minute, so the US will be kicking themselves for that.
They will be, but I don't think they'll be too worried. They've remained unbeaten this year, haven't they? They're not going to be too concerned by that. They're massively competitive. They're winners. They are a team that is used to winning. So, yes, they'll be disappointed, but it's a friendly game. I don't think they'll be too worried.
38 games unbeaten now.
I can't really say anything to add to that, mate. I think it's 38 games unbeaten in total, but I think it stems into the 70s in terms of home games. I don't think they've lost at home for a number of years, so they are incredibly strong. I think it was against Denmark. I remember the commentator saying it was Denmark in something like 2004 or 2005. So it's getting on 10 years since the US lost a home game, which that's ridiculous, isn't it, really?
Yes, it is slightly. Kind of boring. We must add that this potentially could be the first time that the US go a calendar year unbeaten. The previous time was in 2006. Now that is some going. But let's switch our attentions to Canada. A comfortable 3-0 win for them against the Korea Republic.
It was, yeah. I mean, and they've got, they've got a strong team. We know about the qualities of Christine Sinclair. We know about Desiree Scott and Diana Matheson because we've seen them performing in the NWSL. So no surprise there. Actually, it's a good result because the Korean Republic, because we don't see an awful lot of them, it's easy for us to say, well, Canada were expected to win that one. They weren't going to be challenged. But the Korean Republic are a good side. So for them to win 3-0 and a comfortable 3-0 is a good result for them.
Right, we've briefly got to return to the US team because when we were recording our last podcast, they were actually playing Australia. How did they get on?
The US won 4-0. It wasn't a dominating performance, actually. The 4-0 scoreline would suggest that it was. But I tell you what, if Lisa Devana had had a bit more luck on her side, she could have had a hat-trick. She was unplayable at times, mate. I was very, very impressed with her. I saw her a number of times for Sky Blue last season in the NWSL, and I like her. I really, really like Devana. She is rapid, absolutely rapid, mate. And I tell you what, she gave Crystal Dunn a real run, and Crystal Dunn is obviously very young, still in college, lots of energy, lots of pace, but it was an enthralling battle from start to finish. Really enjoyed the Crystal Dunn, Lisa Devana battle. And I liked Australia. They played very deep, which I think probably worked against them, because if you invite that American team onto you, you're asking for trouble. But I thought they handled themselves okay. The 4-0 scoreline, obviously they won't be pleased with. There was also a training game that took place a few days after that the Americans won 3-2. So the Australians clearly redeemed themselves a little bit in that. That wasn't broadcast, so there's no highlights or anything. But Australia are a good side, and I think that a lot of that stems from an ever-increasing competitiveness amongst their domestic league.
On the subject of their domestic league, thanks for the lead in there. Their season is kicking off very soon, so we decided to catch up, as I said earlier, with our friends at the women's game. So you spoke to Daniel Warby, didn't you?
I did, yes. The Australians are obviously, in terms of time difference, going to be difficult for us to cover. The women's game are an Australian-based podcast, group, followers of the game.
TV channel,
they do the lot. Incredibly dedicated. And there is no one better to talk to about the Australian game than them. So, yeah, it was a perfect opportunity to have a chat with Danielle and see what she had to say about the upcoming season. Okay, so I'm joined by Danielle Warby of the women's game based down in Australia. Danielle, it would be rude of me not to say g'day in my best Australian accent.
Oh, g'day, Kieran. That was my best Australian accent.
It was terrible. Don't worry, I'm renowned for my bad accents. I'm not too bad, thank you. Not too bad at all. It's freezing over here in the UK. I'm going to assume that you're sitting in the sunshine over there, are you?
Yeah, it's not too bad. It's now that it's calmed down after the bushfires of a week and a half ago, which was pretty intense. You may have heard about that over there. But yeah, everything's pretty good here at the moment. I'm thinking a day at the beach might be a good idea.
Okay, don't rub it in too much. But obviously, we're going to talk about football, and that's what we're here for. So you obviously cover the Australian game in quite a lot of detail down there, and you attended the media launch for the Australian W League, which is due to launch this coming weekend. Tell us about the media launch. What did you learn, and what can we expect ahead this season?
Yeah, the launch was great, as always. There was a representative from each of the teams present there, and we had a talk from the CEO of the FFA, David Gallop, and he's very enthusiastic about this season, as we all are. And one of the key things that we're noticing is that they're bringing back the broadcast game, the live broadcast game on the ABC, which is the equivalent of your BBC, our national broadcaster, on a Sunday, which is fantastic. I mean, one of the things that we missed out on last year was live games on telly. We did have some live streams, but there were a lot of problems with those, and it's good to see that's back. Talking to the football side of things, every year of the W League has gotten better year on year on, so we're expecting no less from this year as well. We've got some really awesome internationals coming through, which is very exciting, and I'm thinking that, yeah, we say this every year, but I mean it every year, and it's always been true. This is going to be the best W League ever.
You mentioned top internationals there. I was going to mention those, and you've got some, as you mentioned, huge names coming over, the likes of Nadine Angora, who is obviously the current European Player of the Year. You've got American international Laurie Lindsay, former American international Laurie Lindsay, who will be coming over. So it must be quite exciting for you guys to see names like that coming over.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got a couple of captains. So you've got, you know, Nadine Angra, captain of the German team, and of course Jess Fishlock, captain of the Welsh team as well. And you know, it just speaks to the quality of the W League that these players are coming back, you know, returning or coming over for the first time. You know, I know Nadine has been playing with Tamika Butt over in Germany, and asked her about it and asked what the league was like, and actually was quite proactive in getting herself over here. So you know, it's a great boon for us, and we're going to see some really good quality football.
So for those that maybe don't know over here in the UK, because we don't have the exposure to the W League that maybe we would like, there's 8 teams that are going to be competing. What's the sort of distribution of players like? Is it evenly distributed? Is there one team that's stronger than another, or how does it work on a year-by-year basis?
Yeah, we're not. It's not like the NWSL, say in the US, where your team, national team members are allocated, and there's a limit. We can, any of our national team members can play wherever they like, wherever they get the best deal. And the only thing that is limited is the number of internationals. So it's a limit of 3 on each team. And most of the teams have taken advantage of that and put on a full roster of internationals. There's a couple of teams that haven't done that. And what you'll notice is that's Adelaide United and the Newcastle Jets. And, you know, it's a little bit unfortunate, because I do feel that having those internationals really boosts the team. And, you know, particularly when you've got a lot of young players like Adelaide and Newcastle do, it's nice to have that international exposure. But unfortunately, we're not seeing them in those teams, and I think that they will suffer for it this season.
Well, looking at some of the teams that are going to be competing, you mentioned Jess Fishlock. Obviously, we know her well over here. Another player from Britain that will be represented is Jodie Taylor, who's going to be playing for Sydney FC, I believe.
Yes, she certainly is. She's one of the internationals in Sydney, and yeah, I'm personally really excited to see her play, because yeah, she's on, and you know, she's a very exciting player, and she will be joined also by Emma Katea, who's from New Zealand. So Sydney's got a lot of local players as well. It's a really good mix of, you know, local, international, young, and experienced in Sydney.
And obviously, you're going to have your own Matilda internationals as well, the likes of Lisa Devana and Samantha Kerr, who obviously have been playing out in the NWSL in America, improving their game in a professional league. It must be exciting for you not only to see the international players from abroad, but to see your own internationals, to see how they've developed during their time away.
Yeah, those 4 players, well, 5 at the end there, were amazing over in the US, particularly Devana and Kerr. I think they really, really stepped up and showed, you know, what quality Australian footballers we actually have over here. It's, you know, we see them play here and you go, yeah, they're amazing. But when you see them play with, you know, the best in the world, and, you know, obviously the US are the number one team in the world, and they're, you know, holding their own alongside those players, it gives you great hope for the future. And, you know, speaking of Devana, like, she's joined Melbourne Victory this year, and she'll be playing with Jess Fishlock, which I'm quite excited about. They're both very feisty players, and I'm hoping to see some, you know, real fireworks with Melbourne.
Any young players that people should look out for? I had an opportunity to see the Australian team play against the US a few weeks ago, and despite the fact that the Australians lost 4-0, they didn't disgrace themselves, did they? They certainly put up a fight, and there's some good young players coming through there, isn't there?
Yeah, there certainly is. Steph Catley, you know, is a player that we always rave about, and she again performed fantastically. And we've got Sydney FC has a player, Chloe Legazzo, who is the captain of the young Matildas. So you wouldn't have seen her in that game, but she really sort of had a breakout at the end of last year. She started to, you know, really show her style in the last couple of games, and in the off season, she's just been on fire. So she would definitely be on my list of players to look out for. I mean, when you say young players, I mean, that's the thing with our national squad. Yeah, we'll take a few old heads. The majority of them are in their, you know, teens and early 20s. So, you know, picking out just one of that bunch is really, really difficult. But, you know, speaking of that game against the USA, I mean, Katrina Gorrie, who is our central midfielder, just, you know, really, really shone, and she's playing with Brisbane Roar this season. So I definitely keep an eye on her as well. And the whole Roar team, I think they've got about 9 midfielders in that squad. And, you know, all of the team bar one is from Queensland or Brisbane, and that one is Nadine Angerer. So, yeah, on paper, those guys are going to be pretty hard to beat.
You actually stole my thunder there, because Katrina Gorey was the player that I actually picked out when I spoke to former Matilda Alicia Ferguson. She was the player that really impressed me, and I thought Tamika Butt was very good in midfield as well. But I mean, it must be encouraging for you. We've seen Australia rise to 8th in the world rankings. They've obviously won away at France. We were talking before the recording, it was probably a little bit fortunate in terms of the chances that France created and didn't take. But that must be really encouraging for you to see not only these players going out to leagues like America and developing, but they're also improving the national team. And you must be quietly optimistic that you can make a good impression.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that game against France, I mean, we can't forget the phenomenal performance of our goalkeepers. France had a lot of chances, but, I mean, we pulled out some amazing saves. Bree Davey and Lydia Williams are just world-class. And, you know, you just can't go past that. And, you know, particularly with, you know, Nadine coming in and, you know, Melissa Barbieri is back with Adelaide. We've got such an amazing range of goalkeepers over here. And it's not often that you can say that in women's football is, check out our amazing goalkeepers. But, we're very excited. And, you know, you're going forward for the next World Cup. I mean, we've got our Asia Cup in May next year over in Vietnam, and that's going to be the real test. I mean, it's our qualifying championship for the World Cup. So, and I mean, as you probably know, Australia won that last time on penalties, and, you know, we'd be looking to sort of do the same again. And with this young squad, and if we can get the mix right and, you know, going forward and build steadily and sustainably, I think, you know, it's going to be a very exciting team. The Matildas are going to be a very exciting team to watch in the next World Cup.
Fantastic. Well, Danielle, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Could you tell people how they can follow you and how they can follow the Australian progress? Because there are very few more dedicated than you guys to actually covering the game. So how can people follow you and what can they expect from you?
Yeah, well, the women's game, it's thewomensgame.com. We are the only women's football website in Australia, but we are, you know, certainly... This is our number one thing. We love it. We have a massive passion. So you can check out the website. People can sign up to our mailing list on the website. We send out a weekly email during the season. We have a Twitter account, Twitter/thewomensgame. We're also on Facebook. That's Aus Women's Game, A-U-S Women's Game. We couldn't get the women's game there, so it's a little bit confusing. We also have Instagram, Tumblr, you know, you name it, we're on it. We'll be stepping up our video content this year, where we've got a whole strategy of post-game interviews and features on players and that whole thing. So if video is your style, look out for that. We've got a bunch of interviews that we shot yesterday at the launch, so they'll be going up over the next week. And, yeah, we're very excited for the league to start. It all kicks off on Saturday. We'll be heading up to the game in Newcastle, so it's Newcastle v Perth, and we'll be live tweeting that game, and, you know, there'll be photos and post-match interviews and the whole works, and that will continue throughout the whole season.
Definitely no stone left unturned there. Lots of stuff to come from the women's game, so give them a follow, guys, and we will obviously speak to Danielle over the course of the season, because if we're going to be looking for information, it doesn't seem like there's anyone better to turn to. So thanks very much, Danielle.
Thanks so much for having me.
The Women's Football Podcast. Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud. SoundCloud.com/WFPod.
The big news recently was the Ballon d'Or nominees, both for player and coach. Just going to rattle through the players who have been nominated. Nadine Angerer, the German keeper, who of course got best player in Europe. Nilla Fischer of Sweden. Elena Gersling of Germany. Saki Kumagai of Japan. Her countrywoman, Yuki Ajimi. Marta of Brazil. Alex Morgan of the US women's national team. Abby Wambeck. Christine Sinclair. Pick your winner.
I want to comment on who's missing first. Where is Lauren Holliday?
I don't know. You tell me.
Well, I saw the list when it came out, and it was the name that jumped out immediately. And we put it out on Twitter, didn't we? We said, you know, what do you make of the Ballon d'Or list? And the majority of responses that came back to us were Whereas Lauren Holliday, she was the NWSL Player of the Year. She was Golden Boot winner. She's consistent for the US Women's National Team. I was just astounded, mate. Obviously, it's difficult because who do you leave off that list? But Lauren Holliday's absence is I can't explain it. I really
speechless, aren't you? Speechless.
I literally am speechless, as was just proved there with my mumbling.
So, of the list, who would you put in your top three?
It's difficult, isn't it? I think last year, obviously, Abby Wambeck won it. A lot of people expected Christine Sinclair to maybe have it because of the performances that she put in at the Olympics, and she was consistent throughout the year. She's been good again, once again, this year. She's been great for Portland. She's always consistent for the national team, but maybe not for me this year, the one to pick. I think Abby Wambeck could be the winner. She obviously beat Mia Hamm's international record, and if you do that, Mia was an incredible player, an absolute legend of the game, and for Abby to pass her at the age of 32 or 33, wherever she is, she's still got caps left in her, she's still scoring goals, she's getting further and further away from that target. It's impressive, but I would say Abby's probably favourite. I really like Lena Gosling. She obviously played for Wolfsburg, won every competition for them. She played for Germany in the Euros, won the competition with them. So how do you look past her? So Abby Wambeck, Lena Gosling are my two front runners. I like Nila Fischer. I think she's been incredible for Sweden. Is Lotte Schelin not on the list?
I think she might be.
Well, if Lotte Schelin is on the list, then I'm going to go Lotte Schelin as my third player.
I've got to say, the website that I looked at didn't have her on.
I'm pretty sure she is.
She must be. A lot of people questioning the inclusion of Marta on that list.
Yes, they are. And I can, from their perspective, I can see why. Because we don't see an awful lot of her. And I think that's the big problem. But my question would be, is it fair to say that she shouldn't be on there when we don't see as much of her? And the reason I say that is that Marta has just been nominated alongside Kristen Press, who is also an unfortunate absentee, I will add. Kristen's been amazing in the Swedish league. They've both been nominated alongside Ramona Backman for Swedish Player of the Year. Now, are you telling me that Marta is not doing anything, yet she's been nominated for Swedish Player of the Year alongside World Player of the Year?
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. Coach of the Year, I'm going to rattle them off. I've got a very tough name to start with. Gilles Eikem. Eikem. Yeah, I know, but I'm not, so. who of course, took the French under-19 team to European Championship gold very recently. He's on the list. Kenneth Heine Müller, the Danish coach, is on the list. Ralf Kellermann, as you mentioned earlier, the Wolfsburg manager who won absolutely everything. Shelley Kerr at Arsenal is on the list. Of course, she got a cup double this season. Patrice Lair of Lyon is on the list because, frankly, they win every game 100-0. Sylvia Neid, the Germany coach, won the Euros. She's, of course, on the list. Cindy Parlow-Cohn of the Portland Thorns, the NWSL champions, is on there. Evan Pellerud, the Norway coach, is on the list. Of course, they got to the finals of the Euros. Anna Signal of Scotland is on the list. And Pia Sundhage, the Sweden head coach, completes the nominees. Who are you going for?
It's a great list, isn't it? It's really difficult. I don't envy the people that have to pick this one. Personally, I'd go for Ralf Kellermann. You mentioned in your introduction, he's won everything. They won the German League, they won the German Cup, they won the UEFA Champions League against the odds, beating Lyon in the final. He's assembled an incredible team there, and I think he's deserving. I think Sylvia Neid will run him close. She obviously won the European Championships with Germany and, you know, has assembled a really good young team. She put a lot of faith in a lot of young players during that tournament. We mentioned them before, Leonie Meyer, Leopolds, Leona Lotson, Jennifer Marijan.
So, list goes on, doesn't it? List goes on.
It really does, yeah, and it's frightening how good they're going to get. So Sylvia Neid would be up there, and I would also put the Norway manager in there because I think that he has assembled a very, very good team. We saw that in the Euros. Some people may question some of their tactics in some of the games. Obviously, we like to refer to it in England as parking the bus, but you do what you can to get results, don't you?
And it worked. It worked.
Well, it did. You get the results, don't you? Okay, it didn't work in the final, but it worked up to that point, and take that out of the equation, he's assembling a very ambitious and a very energetic young side with lots of talent. We obviously know about Caroline Hansson, who is playing her football out in Sweden at the moment. Ada Hegerberg is obviously someone that we're a big fan of because she's been on the show, she blogs for us, but more than that, she's just a great player. And I think that Norway have got a really bright future. So I think any one of those three would be deserving, but then there are also others on the list. I think Anna Signal is showing exactly what she's capable of. Scotland are an improving nation. They're really making strides, and I think that they've got a real chance of qualifying for the World Cup.
I've got to say, they've put in some absolutely fantastic results together so far.
Well, they have. I know that they haven't played the strongest of opposition, and the real test will come when they play Sweden in their group, but they're outscoring Sweden at the moment. You know, Scotland have scored 20 and conceded 2. I think Sweden, after their 5-0 win, have improved their goal difference, but Scotland was streaks ahead on goal difference. So I think she's a worthy nominee. I don't think she'll win it, but I think she certainly deserves to be on that list. I know some people will question Shelley Kerr's inclusion. I think Matt Beard was unfortunate. I know that people have talked about the investment and they've talked about the foreign players, but to flip a team from bottom of the league to champions in 1 year, it doesn't matter how much money, it doesn't matter how many good players you've got. We've seen it in the men's game so many times where money hasn't worked. We saw it at Chelsea Ladies where money hasn't necessarily worked. I think Matt Beard was unfortunate. Shelley Kerr won a domestic double, so she has silverware to show for her nomination. But, you know, does she deserve to be on there? I'm going to let other people judge that one.
So there we go, the Ballon d'Or nominees. And from both of us, the very best of luck to everyone nominated. And we will discuss the winner as and when we know.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Okay, a couple of leagues are in their off-season, so that means player movement. Gearing a couple in the NWSL already.
Yep, and once again, as we've mentioned before, it's the Seattle Reign who seem to be the busiest club. I'm not sure if they're trying to ignore the college draft next year, but they've given up another couple of picks, or certainly one pick, to acquire potentially a couple of players. They've already acquired the signing of Mariah Nogueira from Boston, who was drafted in last year's college draft, so she will play for the Seattle Reign next year. But the one that's interesting me at the moment, and I'm going to have to refer to my notes because it's a little bit of a confusing one, there was a tweet that went out by the Seattle Reign earlier this week or the week before, and it said that they've acquired the rights to Alina Garcia-Mendez and Nikki Marshall from the Washington Spirit, as well as their number 17 selection in the 2014 draft. And in return, Washington will receive the rights to Rene Cuellar and the number 23 pick in the 2014 college draft. And it was also announced later on that Washington will also receive the rights to Jodie Taylor, who we obviously know well. She's been on the show before. She's going to be playing in Sydney in the W League this autumn and winter. So that would suggest that Jodie is potentially going to be involved with Seattle next year if the trade doesn't go through. If it does go through, she'll obviously play for Washington. So what on earth does they have the rights to mean? It's not something that we're familiar with in this country, is it?
Beats me, mate. I just like the word acquired. Not signed, not captured, acquired. It's like they've just come across them and gone, yeah, we'll have that.
It's a bit like an acquired taste, isn't it? You know, you try something for the first time and you're not really sure about it, and the person opposite you goes, well, it's a bit of an acquired taste. So, you know, but I don't really get it. I don't know what it means by they have the rights to. It doesn't really, I mean, to me, it suggests that they haven't moved yet. So Nikki Marshall and Garcia Mendes haven't moved to Seattle yet. Rene Cuellar and Jodie Taylor haven't moved to Washington yet. So I don't really know why you announce it. I'd be interested to know from some of our American followers if they can explain it a bit more to us, because it's not something that we see in England. It's not something I'm familiar with, and I'm pretty certain it's not something you are either. So I'd like to know a bit more about that.
Yeah, me too. Please get in touch. A rather more straightforward transfer out in Sweden concerns a certain England midfielder.
Anita Asante, yeah, one of my favourite England internationals. I'm quite happy to say that on record. I think she's a rare breed in the women's game in England. She's an enforcer. She's just one of those players in the middle of the park that breaks things up, and I like her. I think she's a real important member of the England squad. She's obviously injured at the moment, which is why she hasn't been involved in the recent qualifiers, but really good player, really like her.
I've got a treat for you.
Go on, tell me what it is.
I interviewed her.
And how was it?
Yeah, great, thanks. Have a listen. Anita, you have been on the move. You've joined Malmo.
Yeah, that's right. Looking forward to it. I think it's a good move for me at this point in my career. And they've displayed how good a team they are this season, been playing some really great football and obviously won the league. So, you know, there's lots of ambition there at the club and I want to be part of that.
What's kept you in Sweden?
Good question. I think, you know, I've had a really positive experience here so far. I've had a really good kind of year and, well, two seasons at Kopparberg, Göteborg. And generally, the lifestyle here is really nice. Everybody's really friendly, very active, outdoorsy types of people, and, you know, really fits my kind of personality and in that way. But generally, I've had a really good playing, positive playing experience, and that's kept me here because I think the competition in this league is so tough, and all the games are really competitive. Is one of the main reasons that I've decided to stick around.
So is that somewhere that you see a sort of long-term future?
Potentially. You know, I think that Malmo are a club that have a long-term ambition. They're looking to, you know, develop and build the team they have and within the youth kind of structure that they have too. And, you know, I think as long as I'm able to compete at this level alongside good players in a competitive training and game environment, then absolutely right now for me, it's providing a really good professional environment and lifestyle that allows me to do that. So, you know, I don't really see a reason why I should leave at this point.
Is it going to be a bit of a wrench leaving Gothenburg? Because I know you have some friends there. We've had Yao Ava Bush on the show before.
Yeah, you know, it never gets easier. I think it's part of the professional sports world, you know, to, you know, develop and change and take on new challenges. And along the way, you make so many good friends, you know, within the game, teammates and staff alike. So it's really tough to leave. You know, Yao, as you mentioned, is someone I played, you know, football with over the years when I played in America too, and was, you know, one of my first roommates in my professional, you know, first time as a real pro. So, you know, we have really, you know, you build bonds with people and it never gets easier when you leave, but every time you build new memories and new positive experiences. So it's just part of the process, I think.
Are you someone who sort of looks long term? I mean, you've played over here, you've played in America, as you've mentioned. I mean, could you possibly go back and play over there?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I believe it or not, even though I've moved around a bit and played on different teams, I am someone that likes actually to be create a hub for myself, if you like, and kind of an environment where I feel comfortable in and have a good kind of playing experience. But you know, lots of circumstances have allowed me to pursue new opportunities that have allowed me to develop in my game and my confidence and, you know, other aspects of me as a person more generally. So, yeah, absolutely. You know, if the occasion came where I felt like I wanted to play back in America or even in England, then, yeah, I never say never. But right now I'm really happy in my current situation.
You've alluded to it there. What do you feel playing, certainly in Sweden, has brought to your game?
I can only speak, I guess, I'll start with Kopparberg. I think just being in this environment, Torbjörn Nilsson was my coach and, you know, he's an ex-pro. And I think that he allowed me the freedom to kind of express myself as a player. And in the midfield, you know, a lot of people out there know me as a centre-back. I've had a lot of experience playing there, but really here I've been able to establish myself as a midfielder and I feel like I've had success with that. So that has been a really positive feel and move for me personally. And I think just continually developing my abilities in the field more offensively here has been a great challenge and one I've really kind of thoroughly enjoyed and kind of want to continue to develop. So I think that's been one of the really good sort of overall positive aspects of me playing here.
You've obviously been a full-time pro for a little while now. What do you consider the benefits of that? Because obviously the league back here is sort of semi-professional.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're passionate about the game that you compete in and you want to compete in major competitions, domestically and internationally, you want to be playing football as often as possible. You know, you want to be on the field, you want to be practicing and working on not only your strengths but your weaknesses too. And being a full-time pro allows you to do that without the other kind of stresses that come with life in general, you know, balancing a work and or playing environment, school environment, and those things, which I've done before, so I know that it is doable. But the flexibility and the freedom to continually try to develop myself, regardless or outside of just training with my team on an individual level, it is really useful and kind of gives me growth as an individual player.
You've mentioned the possibility of coming back to England. Would the league need to be professional to perhaps bring you back?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, you know, to some extent, because I feel like I've done that and that was a really great and positive experience for me personally. And I loved the time that I had it at Arsenal. You know, that is what in Sweden they would say your mother club. And for me, that was great. But I also feel like I've developed and have grown as a person and as a player. And so it's the sport. So I don't necessarily want to go back in time. I want to continue to move forward. And I think as long as there are other places or playing opportunities that are doing that, then that's really where I want to be. So obviously, if that was the case in England, absolutely, I would love to be home and around friends and family and old supporters and supporters that have followed me throughout my career. So, yeah, and, you know, that's definitely always going to be an option.
Do you sort of miss home, family?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'll be actually travelling home, hopefully, early next week and be home during the off-season. But, yeah, I definitely miss home. It's tough, you know, to be away from your friends and family and be in a place where you don't necessarily speak the language. And, you know, Sweden's great because everybody pretty much speaks fluent English, which is, you know, one of the pluses of being here. But sometimes just having that comfortability of people that relate to you, understand you and your humor or other aspects of just, you know, that comes with culture in general is tough to be away from. And I miss London. I love London. I'm a Londoner in general, so any opportunity I can to be home and go to places that I'm familiar with is fun for me. But that's, you know, being in Sweden, it's very close to England, so it's a lot easier for me to travel home when I have free time, which I couldn't do when I was in America. Mm-hmm. So that also is one of the bonuses of being here.
Let's end on Malmo. They've obviously had success in the Champions League and also in the league back in Sweden. What do you hope to achieve with them?
Well, I would love to win, you know, the league, Damallsvenskan, with a top side. And why not it be Malmo? I think they have a great squad of players and they have a lot of determination and ambition. But I would love to win the league here. And I would obviously love to, my dream would be to win Champions League again. And if I could do that with Malmo, then that would be, you know, a perfect way to kind of top off my experiences here in Sweden.
The Women's Football Podcast. Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud. SoundCloud.com/WFpod.
So we're nearly at the end of the show. Got to quickly mention that the European Under-17 Championships will be underway later this month. The draw was recently done by Sue Smith and Faye White. Group A consists of England, Italy, Austria and Portugal. And B consists of Germany, Scotland, France and Spain. If ever there was a group of death, it's probably that one. Have fun, Scotland. And that kicks off on the 26th of November. Got to say a massive thank you to everyone who got involved in our Twitter debates, which we mentioned earlier in the show. So thank you very much for that. We've got a couple of prizes to read out, Kieran.
We have. Obviously, we've been very fortunate that we've had a couple of prizes donated. We wanted to say thank you for helping us pass 2,000 followers on Twitter. So we ran a Twitter competition. We had a signed Doncaster Rovers programme by US international Whitney Engen from the 9-0 win last season. And She Kicks magazine kindly donated a year's subscription.
So the winners of both of those prizes, congratulations, Sue McLaren. You have got the subscription. And Jen Jensen, you have won the signed programme. Congratulations to you both. We'll follow you on Twitter just so you can DM us your addresses. So, there we go. End of the show. A big thank you to Anita and Danielle. Contact details are as follows.
Yep, you can contact us as always on Twitter. We're on at WFPod. We are also on email. We're on thewfpod@gmail.com. Don't forget you can listen to us on iTunes or on SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/WFPod. And don't forget to read our blog, wfblog.wordpress.com. We can assure you we will get some more stuff on there. It's gone a bit quiet in the last week or two, but we will make sure we have some more stuff on, I promise.
So all that's left is for us to sign off. We're being hurriedly kicked out of this cafe. So, Kieran, always a pleasure.
Thanks a lot, and thanks to all the listeners. Thanks again to Anita and Danielle for coming on the show. Always a pleasure to have good people on.
Speak soon, everyone.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.